Welcome everyone to episode 42, 42nd episode of GNP Unlocked. Today we're going to talk about H-1B visa. And please note that GNP Unlocked is available in Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Amazon Music, and even in YouTube Podcasts. So after this show concludes, we're going to upload this within the next 3 to 5 days in our podcast. So please support DNP Unlocked. This, all the episodes that we did so far, great resource for our immigrant nurse community. And we're doing this, guys, because we have you guys in mind. So today, Kay, we're going to talk about H-1B visa. Before, we have segments where we talk about EB-3, which is perhaps the most common visa nurses use to come over here to the U.S., with the exception of our Canadian peers, because they use the TN visa. But recently, we've seen a lot of talks about H-1B visa. What is H-1B visa? What's the difference between that and EB-3 visa? How will this benefit our nursing community coming over to the U.S.? So I really wanted to do this show. What do you think about H-1B visa, Kay?
Everything comes with the pros and cons, right? So H-1B, I think it's a very good visa option. I would think of this like a travel nurse, you know, something that you need immediately and you cannot wait for a long time. It's similar to that. It's, for me, international nurses coming on an H-1B is considered, for me, a traveling nurse. But only that the difference is they come on a longer contract terms, working contract terms. They come a visa that, and they cannot, you know, they cannot go home after 3 months, right? But of course their contract is like about a year, 2 years longer. Similar benefits like a normal employee in the United States, like every visa does. But again, the key ingredient here is it's faster to bring in people. When you need them, you can get them here as fast as 3 months. So that's a very fast processing compared to EB-3, which might take, like, you know, fastest would be 8 months. But due to retrogression, I can take like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Yeah. God knows. Right? How many years were you affected before, Paul? It was like more
nine,
than five.
Nine plus, almost 10.
And then Anna was, it was around that, right? Because you guys applied the year after, like 2004, 5, 6.
Yes. I was 20. I applied 2008 right after I passed the boards for nursing. Yeah. But Anna was like 1 or 2 years earlier. But that was a time where there was severe retrogression. The retrogression that we have right now is only 3 years before. Yeah. 3 years for us is super quick already.
Yes, usually 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
So this one, the H-1B, is fast. Months, right, you're here months. And I know a lot of companies are even like training back in the Philippines, preparing the nurses to come here, expecting them to be here in 3 months. So the training starts within a month after they sign their contracts. But due to the retrogression, you know, a lot of employers are moving towards this H-1B.
Now, for me, Kay, H-1B is a good pathway for nurses. But just to be clear, H-1B visa is very different with EB-3. Because EB-3 is immigrant visa, which means day one, this is what's good, Kay. Because when I arrived here, I was EB-3 visa, right? Day one, I was already a green card holder, right? So that counts towards citizenship. That's why on the fifth year that I was here, I was already able to apply for citizenship. That's under EB-3, right? H-1B visa is a non-immigrant petition, which means technically we call this in the Philippines or in other countries, work visa. So it's temporary work visa, similar to when you're going to Middle East. Okay, you get work visa as well. So the visa allows you to work to the U.S. with stipulations, of course. And we're going to talk about that later, which means it's a non-permanent visa. Your stay doesn't count towards citizenship. And of course, because it's a non-immigrant visa, it has an expiration date, right? The residency period when you're green card holder, okay, they give you 10 years of green card, right? But even if your green card expires, so long as you're here in the US and residing here, you don't lose the residency status because you are a permanent resident, right? Lawful permanent resident. So the lawful permanent resident grants you a lifetime residency unless you break that and you leave the country for more than a year, two or three. But with non-immigrant visa, you are not a lawful resident. You are here for temporary work, right? The other thing with H-1B visa, it is much faster. But okay, let me tell you this, all right? I like EB-3 because the employment-based immigrant visa, permanent residency visas, are well allocated depending on categories. That's why you have EB-1 for highly skilled, very rare experience or skill people. Like, for example, if you're an astronaut and they want you here in the US, you probably could apply for EB-1, right? EB-2 is for those master's degree, doctor's degree holder. EB-3 is for skilled workers and professional workers like nurses. And then we're also like very spoiled with EB-3 because we also have EB-3 Schedule A for nurses and physical therapists because there's shortage based on Bureau of Labor Statistics. And then you have EB-4 and EB-5 for other categories. So it's well spread out, well defined. H-1B visa is anybody's ball game. It's like everybody who meets the criteria of H-1B visa, professionals, specialty, occupations, get to apply for H-1B visa. Now we're not only talking about nurses, okay? We're also talking about doctors who wants to work over here, other healthcare allied fields, right? And then you also have one of the highest demands here in the US are people from, you know, information technology sector, right? Computer science, data analyst sector that are moving from Asia to here. The other thing is EB-3, for example, right? The entire employment base has 140,000 limit per year, right? Plus allocated whatever was not used for the previous year or whatever. There's more limit, right? H-1B visa has 65,000 visas allocated only, right? So even less, right? So now you're not only competing with other sectors that are in demand here in the US, because now it's not only about nurses and physical therapies, but you're also competing with a much lower number of H-1B visa. In fact, okay, the fiscal year starts April 1st, all right? April 1st. Yeah. Within several days, okay, within a week, the slots would be full, right? Like, for example, back in 2020, I remember, for 65,000 visas, there were more than 250,000 that applied. So the way they do that is not by qualifications anymore, because everybody who gets approved to apply for H-1B visa is qualified. Remember, there's specialty criteria, right? So you know, okay, how they pick who gets the H-1B visa? Lottery. This is true. They lottery the 65,000. So now it's by luck because all of you guys are qualified. So that's the problem. It comes with its own certain cons or disadvantages. But then there's good news. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, right? There are H-1B cap exempt providers or organizations that can get you an H-1B visa regardless of the cap, which is the 65,000 cap, right? These are the nonprofits. And thankfully, Kay, at least 56% to 60% of hospitals in the US are nonprofit. But there are caveats. It has to be a severe shortage area. But thankfully, Kay, a lot of rural communities in the US are also shortage area based on HRSA. So in short, there are hospitals that are directly hiring nurses under H-1B visa cap exempt, all right? But again, the competition is very, very tight, okay? Because if they can only hire so-and-so nurses, imagine how many nurses would apply because these are all the nurses waiting for EB-3, right? That makes the supply and demand in favor of the employer because there's probably going to be 1,000 nurse employees versus 10 spots. They can select the cream of the crop. So H-1B visa is faster, but a little more elusive because it's faster. So there's more demand to to get that visa. But then again, you also have max stay. Okay? The first visa issued is for 3 years. You can renew it for another 3 years, total of 6 years, assuming that within that time frame you have been filed for EB3. Because Kay, if you don't, and after 6 years your visa lapses and you don't have other pathways for other visa that allows you to work, or you haven't been filed for EB3, you have to go home because your status will lapse, right? Which means you're going to be out of status, which means you're not legally allowed to stay in the States at that point. So that's one caveat. Maximum of 6 years. And the other thing, Kay, is H-1B visa. I'm throwing it all out there, right? H-1B visa is also employer attached or related, or how do they say that? We're not lawyers, but you literally have an SSN with your employer's name, right? Because I have friends with H-1B visa before. So which means something goes sideways with you and your employer, God forbid, right? The employer says, you know what? We're going to fire you, all right? You have to find an employer that gets you an H-1B visa quickly within a few days. I do not know the regulation. But Kay, you can easily get out of status if the employer fires you or something happens. And considering that a lot of states here in the States are at will, which means they can fire you without a cause, which means they woke up today and choose violence and say, you know what, we don't like you. We're gonna fire you.
I know a lot of that. I just woke up today and I decided to fire everyone like that.
You know, healthcare industry, Kay. We love it. We work for it. But healthcare industry is a little toxic sometimes. Like, even if it's not your fault, they fire you, right? They just don't want liability or stuff like that. Or you got involved in an issue. They're like, we're going to fire you. Why? Because it's at will. They probably don't want a liability, or you're probably caught in an issue or something, or they probably think you're not qualified for the position, or there might be someone who gets to get paid much lower than you, and now they get fired because someone's taking over. It's politics. But that's the thing, though. If you look at it, it's a little scary for me. There's not really a lot of safety net for me, right? Because if the employer fires me for reasons out of my control, does that mean, Kay, that my status lapses right away and I have to go back to the Philippines, or cannot work in the States until I can find another H-1B visa employer sponsor? So that's the thing. Unlike with EB3, right, we're immigrants, lawful permanent resident. They fire you today, well, okay, I'm just gonna drive up the street and go to the next hospital and send my CV up there. You know what I mean? It's different because you can stay. It doesn't matter if they fire you. You can just work for another hospital, assuming it's not malpractice or negligence related. So there's a certain level of safety net, right? What do you think about that, Kay?
Yeah, so I agree with you. Like I said, there's pros and cons of it. So I think the major factor here to really understand and know if you will have success for H-1B is knowing your employer very well. I think the factor of a nurse is very, you know, coming from the Philippines, you know, it's kind of like standard, because we know that nurses from the Philippines graduate as bachelor's degree, which is a requirement for H-1B. Everyone from the Philippines graduating, for example, is a bachelor's prepared nurse. Now, the question is now, if the nurse has experience, then that's easy. Then she can apply for this job. But when it comes to the employer side, it's very hard to get approved because there's so many things that the employer will have to the criteria that the employer will have to, you know, check off before they can be approved of this H-1B visa. And I want to share something, Paul. I want to share some slides to have people will have an idea what is the denial rates and stuff like that for H-1B.
Yeah, please, so, please.
All right.
While you're doing that, I'd like to highlight this comment, because I might not have mentioned it. I thought I did. But RK, thank you for tuning in YouTube. H-1B employer cap exempt. You are correct. when they are CAP exempt, it means exempted from the CAP, which means they can hire as much as they want for as long as they have an open spot. They can hire as much as they want, which means they don't care about the quota, right? The limit, the visa number limit. That's why for nurses, you want to look for those employers that are doing H-1B CAP exempt. They have to be exempt. There's specific criteria. You have to be a nonprofit. You have to be in a rural area or severe shortage underserved community. But lawyers should be able to help you with that. Thank you, RK, for that. And of course, okay, while waiting for you, Maggie is here. Hello, Maggie. At Advocate for Nurses, that's her social media name. I love her. I watch her TikTok all the time. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning.
She used to work for the board and an expert witness at one point as well. So if you have questions about legality of nursing documentation, orientation, and stuff like that, Maggie is the person to go to. She offers classes.
And both of you are in Texas. Look at these Texas people moving the needle.
Texas making a difference. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but, so I have the slide ready. These are the top occupations approved in H-1B. Like Paul said, you know, everybody can apply for H-1B, but not necessarily that everyone will be accepted. And not all all industry are treated equally when it comes to qualified applicants. And also there's a need, you know, of course, the employer need. As you can see, if you're computer related, 66% actually went to that, the H-1B went to that. And there's like architecture, engineering, serving. So these are mostly related to those programs that has STEM. That's why when I applied back in 2004, Paul, there was not a lot of nursing applicants in nursing schools back then. I mean, year of 2000 to 2022, there were barely applicants for nursing schools back then in the Philippines because everybody was going to the US because of this H-1B that was approved for computers. So all the majority of my high school classmates went to IT and barely anyone went to nursing. I went to nursing, I made a wrong course code application. So they told me, hey, you know what, we're very low in nursing applicants in this university, but if you want to go to a different career path or major, you can go, you know, you can transfer after 1 year, 6 months, but get your foundation started, your first basic courses. So I said, okay, as you can see, health there is 2.3%. And you can see the number, even though they're saying H-1B has a limit, but then again, there are non-CAP exempt, and then they get approved for those because they're not part of that limit. So it can go as more than 300,000 H-1B visas approved in a given year. So this is based from USCIS on 2022. And then, as you can see here as well, the denial rates started declining from 2018 to today. This is a 2022 data, and as you can see, the denial rate is, which means how much the USCIS will deny these applications, or the government will deny these applications, right? It's only 2%. The chances of you getting up in here and getting approved, 98%, right? So that being said, a lot of our employers are going this route, and this is favorable for the nurses as well. They can come here and give that life-changing scenario for their family as well, economic-wise, right? And the third slide in here, you can see the top five countries of birth where H-1B approval is being given is India is the number one, number two is China, number three is Canada, fourth is Korea, South Korea, and number five is the Philippines. Again, this is a 2022 data regarding H-1B. Where are these visa going to? And this number is not like because there's favorability for one country or another. The population of the applicants, the population of the country has relation to this number. India got a lot of applicants. China got a lot of applicants because geographically, if you see, you know, they're the bigger country here. So, and they have a lot of labor workforce. Unfortunately, this is one of the reasons too why these countries are way far back, pushed back when it comes to EB3 application. You can see India has 10 years retrogression, right? For EB3, because again, they have a huge amount of workforce coming to the United States, and only there's a limit that the US can give this visas to them. Nothing to do with favoritism of the United States. Again, it's relative to the applicant and the population of those origin countries. All right, so that's my little graphic there for you guys to have an idea where does your country stands when it comes to H-1B application. Now, going back in here, a lot of people have questioned, okay, why is there high number in 2018? Okay, so I don't want to go political, but there is an impact when it comes to who is sitting or who's running the immigration policies of the United States. You know, some people are proof of those, some people don't. That's why I said America is a great country, because there can be balance. You know, there can be one time that it can be people who likes it most, and there are times that people who doesn't like it most, and then now there's a swing. It's not just one direction, so it has like a balance. On my stand here, right, is this a good sign? Again, economics is neutral and factual. There's pros and cons of each. If it's not balanced properly, then it can be detrimental, or, you know, economics, it can impact our economics situation badly, okay, if there's an imbalance. But if there is a balance of it, and it's a regulated immigration policy, then it can have a good or a positive impact on the economics of both countries, the donor country and the accepting country. So again, regulation and proper placement of rules and not lax policies will be beneficial to both countries economic-wise. So I'm not an economics expert, but again, economics is common sense when you see those numbers, right? So you see the difference between like who's sitting running the show when it comes to the American USCIS, American immigration policy, and was not. So this graph will tell you that. Okay.
Yep. So basically, that's it. That's the core content of our discussion for today. Basically, we just want to let nurses know that there are other options, and that's in the form of H-1B cap exempt. So, but then again, the criteria for I think you have to have at least bachelor's degree and a specialty nursing with this experience. So preferably the higher specialty nursings like ICU, perhaps PICU, you know what I mean? Or something like that. But like I said, it's very competitive, because imagine if there are 5,000-10,000 applicants for EB3 and everybody's waiting for H-1B, then everybody will try to get that H-1B spot, right? But then again, like I said, when you get here under H-1B visa, you still have to get an employer, or at least your current employer should file you for EB3. That's what I would like to let the nurses know. If you are signing a contract with H-1B offering, figure out what's their rule as far as when are they going to apply you for EB3. Because, Kay, you don't just come here with a non-immigrant visa without a pathway for EB3, right? Because if the visa expires, you're out of status, you have to go back home. So if your end goal is to be a permanent resident and eventually a citizen, which majority of us are striving for, then you want to ask your employer to ensure that there is a specification in the contract or terms that says, you know, a lot of them would say after 90 days, that's usually your orientation period if they get to decide if they want to send you back home or not. After 90 days and you're still here, we're going to file you for EB3. For me, that's a good compromise, because you know, I also get to prove to the employer that, in fact, I am qualified for the position. Because remember, these are highly sought after position and specialty occupations, right? So that's it. That's one pathway. And, you know, okay, let me tell you this, because back in retrogression days during our time, when the retrogression was 10 years, 7 years, 8 years. So 3 years pales in comparison to that, right? When I hear that, 3 years, whew, 3 years is such a short time. Because at that time, what we experienced was, imagine retrogression, it's year 2014 and you're retrogressed back to 2002, right? 2005. So it feels like 3 years is a much shorter retrogression. But back in those days, okay, there is a visa called H1C, right? This is no longer available. Yeah,
I saw that one when I was applying for a petition here in the United States. There were boxes you would check, and yes. I saw that one H1C there back then. You know, I've been here for a long time.
That's an option. Yeah, that's an option for nurses before. That's like an H1B version, but for nurses, right? Non-immigrant temporary work visa as well. I think maximum is 3 years, non-renewable, but think of it as an H1B version, but specifically for nurses, because the Congress approved that type of visa to ease the shortage with nursing, right? In the current political climate right now, okay, and that lapsed already, right? Because, of course, Congress puts limits to these specialty visas, right? I don't think that one's going to come back again. I think some lawyers, some companies, agencies are pushing for lobbying for Congress to do it, but we don't have enough lobbying power to do that, because immigrant nursing or immigrant nurses is still very little percentage here in the U.S., right? I don't know the exact number. I don't know how many immigrant nurses represent nurses here in the ANA or in American Nurse Association, but there's not a lot.
We're less than 10% now. I think it's going up. Yeah, it's less than 10%. Yeah.
So still less than 10%. We don't have enough lobbying capacity to really say, hey, can you return H1C visa? That way those people that are actually waiting for EB3, these are people that already are approved. They're just waiting for visa number, right? Yeah. Maybe we can offer them a pathway for H1C while waiting for EB3. That way they get to wait here, but also helping with supplying nurses to ease the shortage. But then again, okay, the other side of the coin, the political climate, I don't think we'll get that approved, because our politicians are busy with so many other things. And we know that, we see that in the news all the time. They're busy fighting with so many things. Other than that, in the nursing world, let's look at the other side of the coin. Is there truly a shortage, or are we just bleeding nurses because nurses are no longer staying in the bedside, right? Perhaps I'm one of those that didn't stay at the bedside. Yeah. I'm sorry, but
it's very hard to stay.
in my personal perspective, okay, it's really hard to tell nurses stay at the bedside, right? Because at one point you're tired, you're exhausted with things that you can't control, right? Like with the bigger things that are out of your control because of the shifting landscape with healthcare, and healthcare continues to be a for-profit type here. I mean, more than 40% of companies here, hospitals are for-profit. Insurances are for-profit, right? Medical supplies company that are giving us very, very low-quality supplies are for-profit. You know what I mean? So, something like that. So travel agencies are for-profit. So they fix their bottom line first before nurses when we're actually doing the job. For nurses, it gets very tiring to hear that, to feel that you're at the short end of the stick when you're actually doing the job. You know, to hear that your CEO is earning 5-10 million and then telling you, we don't have a budget to keep you all nurses, so we're going to get let go of 1,000 nurses today. Right, it's such a hard pill to swallow, because we could evenly split even just the 5 million to keep more nurses in the bedside, you know, something like that. So so the question is there truly a shortage in nursing, or is this a propaganda that everybody is saying because you couldn't keep nurses at the bedside, right? So that's the other end of the stick. It's hard to also bring immigrants when there's also issues here that we can fix ourselves, right? And because of this shifting political landscape, Kay, and this is an unfortunate effect of it, it's cause and effect, right? There are also nurses now that are extremists, in the sense that they are against immigrants, right? Even though immigrants, like what I said, what they say here is, don't shoot the messenger, right?
Yes, correct.
They just hired me and I qualified. I went through a vetting process, but I did not steal anyone's job, something like that. Because some people would not want to work with immigrants because they feel like a job is stolen for an American. In a way, correct. It's true. Maybe I do not agree to it, of course, because I stand for
it. I do not agree on stealing the job from Americans. Yeah. I think there's a vacancy that's available, that is there.
Exactly, because that would have been.
It's not the immigrant nurses who created that vacancy.
It's not the nurses' fault. It's the bigger things that are controlling the healthcare that we don't have control about. So it's like, for me, this is how I see it. Because of all these issues, nurses are like, put in the middle, right? It's like a Colosseum in old Rome, right? We're put in the middle and we're asked to fight each other when in fact we're not the problems. We're not the problem, right? We are the effect because of that problem, right? The pervasive shortage was because we couldn't keep nurses working at the bedside. How do we keep nurses happy with high morale to keep their jobs, right? After COVID, it exacerbated the situation more. Because now, for example, there was one article that said, I read about it, that the ER nurses' average experience now is down to 5 years. Imagine like manning ER with nurses that have 1-2 years experience and they're your charge nurses and they're the most senior nurses. I'm not throwing shade with our baby nurses. Everybody starts with something. But would you feel comfortable if you're the most senior nurse and you have 2 years experience and you get this very high acuity ER trauma cases or ER medical crisis that are CCU type level patients and you couldn't take care of them because you're the most senior nurse. You know what I mean? These are what we see here in the States. A lot of nurses are leaving bedside, moving to the business world, business industry, finance, and information technology. These are nurses, but we're bleeding nurses because of the political climate and stuff like that. So as much as we want to bring a lot of nurses here, I think we could not do something about retrogression. There are now articles that are saying, you know, the retrogression is exacerbating the nursing shortage. It is in fact correct, because the more that you limit that visa, the more that we're not able to fill the position. Imagine hospitals having to wait 5 years to get that position filled. Then nurses.
Yeah. I agree with you, Paul. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're good, you're good.
I always say to people, if there are articles that are being out there, you have to look at there is always going to be two sides. Who's speaking
two sides
of it?
Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So for me, if I read an article, like everybody says, is there a conflict of interest of sharing this information? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's why we live here. We all know that society, that each article will be favorable to one and each article favorable to the other side. So you have to understand who's speaking of it. And the best way to approach this and understand really what's happening to our healthcare is who's saying that. And if they are saying this, who's the other side? Find out who the other side is. And then listen to those other side, and then combine that information from both sides and create your own critical thinking
analysis.
And create, you know, and think what's the best solution for this. Because if we're just gonna keep on listening to one side of the story, then we are missing the other side, and we're not creating an informed decision strategy here.
Right.
So we're not fixing the problem if we are going to just keep on approving or giving a limit. I mean, giving no limit to the visas of the United States nursing shortage. Because when you do that, you're not giving, you're just putting Band-Aid. So like you said earlier, we have a shortage. We have a problem with retaining them. Right?
Retention. Yes.
So, and one of the major factors, therefore, where are we bleeding? Like you said, we're bleeding. Where are we bleeding the most? In your experience, give me, you know, you've been everywhere as a traveling nurse. What are the three, what are the three specialties that you think that we're bleeding the most?
For me, it definitely is ER, right? Because I work in ER and I see it as a revolving door. Like you come in today, you're like, oh, I have a new coworker. Where is she? Where is he? Oh, they left.
Disappear, right?
Oh my God, he's such a good nurse. You know, like I feel like he's one of the nurses I could trust my family with. You know what I mean? Like you sympathize with the nurse, but then you also couldn't blame them if they want to leave and quit nursing altogether. So I feel like that's one. Med surge. I mean, my California nurses, you guys are spoiled, so stay there, enjoy nursing because you guys are unionized, but not everywhere. I've seen my coworkers that are med surge nurses that are always, what's this? The workload is like off the charts, okay? They're filled with 5 to 6 to 7. At one point, I have one coworker that was given 8 patients. And she was an immigrant nurse. And I was like, no, don't let them do that to you. They're doing that to you because you're saying yes. It is not good to have 8 patients, right? And it's a busy morning where all procedures, all doctors are coming in to do procedures and orders and all that, admissions and discharges. So for me, I've seen a lot of nurses quitting the med surge. I have very limited view of, I don't know what's going on with the floor. Our ER is like its own little thing. We're like autistic people. We're just, you know, minding our own business. But I feel like ICU also has a revolving door, especially yes. Higher acuity. I feel like the higher the acuity, the higher the stress of nurses, the more that they leave quickly, right? Because our bodies can only handle such level of stress where we can't take no more, right? At one point we are going to prioritize our health because either our mental health will crumble or our physical health, right? People get sick because they're just so stressed all the time. Imagine that adrenaline. So but yes, these are for me what I observe are revolving doors, which means the retention is really, really terrible. I mean, I've seen hospitals trying their best. But what can a manager do and director do if their CEO says, we're going to cut your budget, right? There's nothing that a director could do to make their nurses happy if they say no more overtimes, right? Or we're not going to hire, instead of hiring 5 more nurses that are already on the pipeline, we're going to cancel those 5 nurses because we don't have budget for them anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I agree with you. There's so many things that are involved, especially I've been here for a long time and I've been traveling for a long time, 18 years. And I have seen how the healthcare system has evolved to now a corporate system. You know, before when I started, a lot of these hospitals are standalone hospitals competing for each other and aiming to give the best. But the problem is bleeding financially. I've seen a lot of hospitals close as well because they excessively, I would not say excessively, but they kind of like mismanage when it comes to finance. Surely there should be balance between profitability and ethical and quality services, but because of the lack of financial acuity or expertise of a lot of our nurse leaders, that's where the corporate started, because corporate now will help in that business aspect. So if you look at the structure of a lot of hospitals right now, you're being led by our nurse leadership, but then they have business partners. So when things get approved, and especially when it comes to staffing, it's not the nurse manager, the nurse leaders, even the CNO cannot decide fully for that. You know, it has to go through the business partners first of those departments, and then it will be presented to the higher ups, to the finance, that are totally not healthcare related people. Their background is mostly finance and business, and this is where the problem comes, because a lot of our business leadership thinks that nurses are plug and play, right? So I think they saw a lot of this during COVID, that nurses were move around. The nurses have moved around from different places, which is totally fine. We're in crisis. But you have to understand why it was allowed, because our leadership in the state have kind of loosened up the law. They, during COVID, there was statement from our government saying that we're going to loosen up the malpractice you know, we're not going to be sued for such activity, you know,
during COVID.
Correct. But now those, you know, those laws are not there anymore. It was used only temporarily to fight, correct, because we're in crisis.
We're back to baseline.
But now you cannot use the same strategy to plug and play nurses everywhere and give them the high high volume as well, because again, the malpractice is there again, full force, you know. And worse is the nurses are being prosecuted criminally now for So there are changes, and my only, you know, time is running out short in our DNP Unlocked, but for me, my take for H1B, which is a good thing, you know, there's a lot of hospitals here that are academic related,
non-profit.
Correct, non-profit academic institutions. So I would say they're the bigger companies who might be doing the right thing when it comes to proper staffing and proper orientation process. So I would say that you will have better luck in your experience. And also, one good thing about H1B is you get paid higher. Because in my observation, I've seen a lot of H1B approved visas in our Lefora community that have higher wages that are at par to the local compared
which is how it should be. Yep. And that's what we're advocating for in Lefora. Like, don't just take a job because they offered you a job and then they're offering you like the bottom of the food chain pay, when in fact you are an ICU nurse for 10 or 20 years. You're bringing so much knowledge and skills. They don't have to orient you for 1 year for nurse residency to be paid like a nurse resident, like you just came off nursing school, right? That's what we're trying to advocate for our Leforans, to also critically, you know, check, research, are they getting paid the right amount? Because you're not just going to come over to the U.S. and get those bottom of the food chain job contracts just so you can come over here. And then figure out, while you're here, you're frustrated because you're earning 25 and the person beside you, right, is barely doing anything, is earning 30 an hour. That's like five an hour difference, right? And it happened to one of my coworkers. I was like, so why did you accept that offer then, right? Like, they're getting paid more than you when you have more experience in this, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And just in addition to Paul's input earlier about the top three specialty that is bleeding, right? I think one of the major factor where we're bleeding because of the job load and the violence. So the good thing is a lot of our nursing organization are pushing for workforce violence protection. That becomes a law. Hopefully that becomes a law. That will help our
research. KSR, for interrupting you, but certain states already have those laws. The unfortunate thing is it's not federal. So Texas only recently passed a law, less than 5 years. But you know, when I went to Chicago, literally, there's posting on the wall that this state law, you cannot hurt employees, something like that, right? When I was in Texas, I was like, ooh, Chicago doing the right thing. Because in Texas, you know, people be hitting ER nurses. I've seen my coworkers, I've seen one of my coworkers get hit in front of me. You know, like, it elicits such a strong emotion from you. You cannot fight with patients because you can end up losing your license. But it elicits such a strong emotion from you because it could have been you, right? That's your coworker. That's literally another nurse that's just doing their job, right? But there was no protection for
violence, like you said, Paul. It's so high, and not on top of that is the amount of load that we're doing. You know, there's workforce violence, and then there's also this heavier patient that you need to turn. Then a lot of our nurses experience back pain, strains, you know, being disabled from work because of the job. And I've heard personally have received a lot of our nurses under disability right now because of workforce, like immigrant nurses coming in here less than a year and getting hurt at work because, number one, there was you know, lack of education when it comes to this. Number two is the lack of education, the lack of staffing to help them. So they, you know, we're Filipino, we're immigrant nurses. We come here, we do our best, and we try, even though sometimes it's going to hurt us, but we're so dedicated to our job. And then we forgot to protect our own selves. And as you can see, during COVID, 25% of the nurses who died are Filipinos.
That's true.
Right? That's a huge amount. Just for Filipino nurses, 25% COVID-related death among nurses were Filipinos, because there's a certain level that we give so much that we're already forgetting ourselves. And that's true. And it's not wrong with that. I think it's just the culture of a lot of immigrant nurses when they get here. They have this thing like utang na loob, and they want to give that. Utang na loob is like your indebtedness, right? That being said, what are your chances to get here? Just to wrap up, ICU and ER will be your highest bet to get here.
They're also one of the most common, being recruited, nurses being recruited, because like I said, revolving door, right? Like,
correct, yes. And what to mitigate those issues that we have talked, like workforce violence and injuries, then it's something that you need to prepare yourself physically. You know, work out, you know, exercise, eat well, stay healthy, mitigate the risks. If you want to get here as fast as you can, H through H1B, I'm going to put my money in there. Your right. Higher chance of getting here is ICU and ER. ER, med-surg, why not med-surg? You know, Paul has mentioned med-surg as a revolving door, because you have, for employers to qualify as an H1B visa, they have to hire bachelors in that specific area. Unfortunately, majority of our med-surg hiring here in the US, or majority of the workforce in med-surg, they are combined of bachelor's and associate degree, which means if the hospital or the employer is posting med-surg job, or if there are med-surg nurses there with associate degrees, that might disqualify them for the H-1B. Again, it's not the nurse, because one nurse approached me, hey, you know what? Everybody's bachelor in the Philippines. Why would they not get approved in med-surg? Because there's two parts of the story, the employee and the employer. The employer side is you need to be hiring only bachelor's degree in that field. So again, that drops med-surg as your top H1B pick. If I was to strategize this, I would choose an ER and ICU experience if you want to go that route of H1B. That's just my opinion on this, right? So yeah, anyway, so many things here.
Yeah. But the option is there. So for nurses who wants to pursue coming over here much quicker, H1B cap exempt is your way to go. Start talking to recruiters, and of course, critically appraise the jobs that are being offered to UK. I've been receiving a lot of messages again on my page. There's this one nurse that I was talking to the other day. They were being offered H1B cap exempt visa. Listen to this. You're not going to be happy about this. And they were being asked to pay $500 to $1,000 just to apply, all right? I read the whole text and emails and job posting, and the first thing I said, scam. And the second that I said, run away, all right? Yes. And then I posted my critical analysis first, all right? It should be employer-sponsored. If you have to pay, why would you have to pay ahead of time? The first step that you need to do is pay before they could offer you a job and stuff like that. That for me screams like a scam. Second, did you see the email? It screams grammatical errors and capitalizations that are out of, in short, it doesn't sound like it was written by a lawyer. And most of the job offers and, you know, stuff like that are written by lawyers, so they don't get sued. So I was like, so many red flags here. And third, they operate in the Philippines. They don't know what hospitals are going to get placed. They said, you have to pay first, and then we're going to find you a hospital. I was like, that's not how it works, right? A hospital must be able to file an H-1B cap exempt for you first before you can get hired. Because how do you know if they're cap exempt? How do you know if they actually have H-1B? Right? So
yes.
Stuff like that. Yeah. But so many scams out there.
Yeah, so there's one company, not only one, I would say more than one, right? And this nurse came to me and, I mean, not one, but a lot. They are asking if this company was legit because they're being offered H-1B. And when I background checked the company, I said, this company is a staffing company, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're being approached by a recruiter, when you're thinking of H-1B and you're being approached by a recruiter, okay, and you have to look, identify first, are they staffing company or is the employer the staffing company? Is the practitioner the staffing company? And if the answer is yes, most likely that will not take off. And what's the reason? Mm-hmm. Because no staffing company is nonprofit and academic. As far as I know, I have not heard of a staffing company that is nonprofit and academic. So that alone will tell you right away that this is something that might not get approved, and take, if you want to take a risk, go ahead. But I have heard a lot of these nurses who went for a staffing company only to be told after a couple of months that, hey, we're converting you to EB3 visa. And they were like so pissed off and upset because now they're, you know, thinking that the expectation was to come here within the next 3 months. Maybe they borrowed money and told their family, say, you know, I'm going to pay you in 6 months when I get to America, right? And they borrowed money or they sold things, some of the things that they sold it to liquidate their assets, you know, to have money for coming to the United States, only to be told that you're not going to have that visa until the next 2 to 3 years. And the bad thing is, when you do that from H-1B, you applied in 2023 H-1B and you didn't get approved and they didn't tell you until 2024, guess what happens to your priority date? It's going to be 2024. So you've already missed that time that you wish that you had that priority date already ahead. So there are risks when you want to proceed with staffing company that is not nonprofit, not academic affiliated institutions, there is high chances that your H-1B will not move forward. Okay, so high risk of denial. And this is a true story. And I personally got like more than 30 people emailing me as soon as they got the message out there that it was refused. And for me, I knew it was going to get refused because that is a staffing company who applied for that.
I just want to add, Kay, that H-1B visa is also not guaranteed because the interpretation lies on the officer who's reading the application. So remember, there are strict criteria, nonprofit, specialty occupation, requires minimum bachelor's degree. What do you call these people that review our petition? I forgot what they call the case manager or something. If they feel like you didn't meet any of those, you're going to be RFE. We call it RFE, which means you get a letter saying requesting further evidence. Either that or you're automatically denied. And that starts the whole process. So the question is, will the employer still be there if you get RFE'd or denied? Because what if they just say, you know what, we're just going to move on to the next applicant. Or, you know what, we're going to stop offering H-1B because USCIS is already denying all our petition, which happened to one of the healthcare system here. They were initially getting approved. Eventually, they were getting denials. So I think they stopped offering it for a bit to figure out why. Because sometimes it's not the fault of the employee, the nurse, or the employer. Yeah. Sometimes it's also based on what is there a new ruling internally in USCIS that we don't know that are saying, you know, cap this H-1B, or there's like 10,000 applicants in H-1B suddenly for cap exempt because DNP unlocked publicized it. Can we lower it down to 1,000 because that's too many nurses? You know, we don't know what they're talking about inside, right? There are political strings that are pulling these things and we don't know what's going on. I mean, it's not even the fault of employer or employee sometimes. It's just rules internally for USCIS to say, we're not going to give this visa or we require further evidence or this hospital doesn't qualify for that visa, or this nurse, we don't need a bachelor's degree to fill this nurse position, so we're not going to give you the H-1B, because the criteria are very strict, not like EB3. So
yeah, employer criteria.
Very, yes,
not the nurse, yes, criteria. I mean the nurse criteria, not the easy nurse to fulfill. Bachelor's mm-hmm. degree with experience.
So like, right? I said, it's not even the nurse's fault, but it's just so many things. So make sure that you guys are also prepared with that. All right. I know we like to be hopeful, like, oh, I'm gonna get hired, but also prepare for what I always say before I start my duty in the ER, right? Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst, right? I always,
yes, correct,
like that. Like what could go wrong, and what would I do if this thing happened, right? I'm always like that, because I don't want to be hoping for the best all the time, and then a bad thing happens, and I don't know what to do. That way, you always have Plan B. Okay, if this gets denied, at least you know I have a pending petition, an EB3 that already has a priority date. At least I'm still waiting for that. I'm just 2 years behind. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or at least I'm in UK, I'm waiting, and I have a job here in UK. Or at least I'm here at bedside in nursing in the Philippines, and I'm still, you know, working that, getting that bedside experience, and I didn't leave nursing altogether. So always have a backup plan, because nothing is guaranteed, especially with the visas for US. And we always say this, do not make rushed, hurried, life-changing decisions until you actually hold that visa and the ticket to the U.S. In fact, until you can cross the U.S.
Unless you're here border, and you can eyeball your employer. You
because even the officer can send you back home. But that's what I said. Nothing is ever guaranteed. All right? So always prepare for the worst.
All right. This is a very good topic to discuss. And thank you, everyone, for the engagement in the chat. So we can read some message, Paul, on the chat. Where did we stop?
RK said from YouTube, most local nurses aren't anti-immigrant. I agree. And I did not generalize our local nurses. I just said very, very few amount. But a lot of nurses that I've worked with are very pleasant nurses, because they need the help. But they see it as a double-edged sword, because they think immigrants weaken their bargaining power. I agree with this, right? Because
100% agree, yes.
Because I also work here. If somebody takes my job and they're okay with getting paid half of what I'm getting, then that weakens my ability to bargain, right? That's why one of our advocacies, Kay, and with the group that we manage, Lefora, right, is to also critically appraise your offer. Do not settle for something less. And okay, to be honest with you, when I started joining Lefora, nurses back in the time were getting offered 20. There is even a nurse that was my student before who agreed to a pay of $17 in Tennessee back in 2018. I was like, how can you say yes to a $17? It's like an LPN salary, or even a nurse tech salary here in the States. I mean, in Texas. But since we started advocating for them to demand for a higher job or negotiate after a job offer was given, now nurses are getting paid 40, 50, 55, 60. I'm happy about that. At least in our own very little way in our group, K, we've encouraged nurses to start negotiating. And remember, one agency called me and said, why are you teaching these nurses how to negotiate their contract? I was like, why would I not? No, remember, off the charts. I'm not going to say who, but an agency literally put me on a meeting and say, why are you telling nurses to negotiate a contract? Why would I not? I'm a nurse. Yeah. Excuse me? Yeah. I don't work for you. Anyway.
You should refer it to me. Tell the boss. Well, I'll teach you how to negotiate your contract with your client.
We'll bring them in DMP Unlocked and talk to them live. And you ask me questions. Why am I doing that? But I'm happy that in my own little way, in our own little way, Kay, we're making positive impact to the lives of our nurses, for our immigrant nurses. Correct. We're teaching them to negotiate, and they're getting higher salary. All right. The good effect with that is they're also getting paid at par with local nurses here in the States. So that doesn't necessarily weaken our bargaining power here in the States as well. Correct. So we can still keep fighting for better pay for nurses, better salary for nurses, right? So we're doing our best. We're only three people here in DNP Unlocked, in a world of 5 million nurses in America and so many more nurses outside US. But in our own little way, at least, I feel like we're making positive impact to the community. Keep renegotiating your contract, keep exploring options, but also preparing for the worst. That's probably my last word, Kay.
Yeah, so it's a matter of understanding that nurses are not vocation people. Mm-hmm. Before, it was a vocation to go for nursing. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a professional. It's a professional nursing, okay? And that means people invested their money in education. When it comes to investing, people expect an ROI. Yes, we are ethical professions. Yes, we love what we're doing. But comes also the investment that our parents or we did to prepare ourselves to be professional nurses in the United States. Okay, so that being said, if you are a profession, there is a value that you're giving to the society. That's why business is involved now in healthcare, because there is a value when it comes to healthcare delivery. Not only, I'm not talking about value, about like humility, like that value comes like in dollar sign. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the value of what you're doing? What is the value of what you're contributing to the, you know, to the organization? If you're bringing in value to the organization, definitely there is something that needs to be negotiated there. Like I said, contracts happen. The only one who see the value of nurses are staffing companies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these staffing companies are billing hospitals different rate depending on the value that that nurse or that talent brings into the table to the hospital. And why are we not following that thinking? The principle that we should know the value that we present to the organization, because now our healthcare is being led by a lot of business people. You should approach this profession with also business in mind. And that being said, we are in the position to balance ethics and profitability. And that's where our nursing leadership should move forward to. They're the one in between nurses, frontline nurses, and they're in the middle of frontline nurses, and they're the people in the middle of this. H1B is very important for our nurse leadership to understand, because H1B can disrupt our workforce, our local workforce, tremendously through the non-cap. If we're going to keep on bringing in international nurses with no cap, no limit, how will it disrupt now your workforce? It's a big factor, right? It's like looking at pandemic. Will you have people who are very loyal to your organization like you're expecting them to be? Right? Correct. If they're leaving in fear, Paul, that their immigration status can disappear like this, uh-huh. What is the rate of retaliation now?
Exactly.
Are we hiring people who are scared to just to keep visas?
So you can control them. Yep.
Yes. So this is where the challenge comes into our nursing leadership. Please have a training for your frontline leaders on this aspects of ethical at recruitment and inform them of labor laws, train them. There are training now for a lot of management, lower management or frontline leaders for about labor issues, because majority of the time there are issues of retaliations on H1B. There's a lot, because these nurses are scared that they can lose their visa. As an advocate for ethical recruitment, please do support educating our frontline leaders and making sure that we balance that, so we don't disrupt the labor workforce of the locals.
And then
now, when you balance that ethical and profitability and the shortage of nurses, then you can get a balance between, again, ethical practice and safe nursing practice. Thank you, RK, for your input. Jordy said, I currently signed a contract for a permanent resident somewhere in Springfield, Missouri. Congratulations. Cox Health, Jordy's coming your way. And Honey Grace, Dr. Paul, not sure. Sorry, this is out of topic question, but I will still try to ask. I hope you will answer it. I wanted to be a nurse practitioner. So I think, Honey, Paul can address that on your...
I will address message. It. Yep. I'll message you. Send me a private message. I'll answer you.
Yeah. Well, Thank you. Last words, Paul.
That's it. There are options, but remember that options are also limited. Limited for a purpose. So like Kay said, to not disrupt the local job market as well. But also, H-1B visa is a potential pathway to the U.S. Just make sure that, because it is very sought, highly sought after visa category, just make sure that you're not dealing with scammers, because, you know, desperation sometimes can cause these scammers to manipulate you and get money from you, okay? So talk to reputable recruiters. And when I say reputable, like recruiters you can trust, and also make sure that you're talking to the right people. Get your lawyers on board, read the contracts properly, accept the job that you're comfortable with, and prepare for, hope for the best, prepare for the worst, just in case the visa don't get approved. Make sure you're still applying for EB3, because that's the permanent route.
Yes. As for me, my my last words for you guys is, first things first, when you're approached by a recruiter offering H-1B, the first thing you should do is verify these jobs, okay? Internet is very open to now. On the hospital, there is a button there that says contact us, all right? So you can contact HR of that hospital and verify, hey, you know, my name is so-and-so, an immigrant nurse. Somebody offered me an H-1B position for your hospital, and this is the information that was given to me. Screenshot that, send it to that hospital's HR, and your HR, and the HR are very good in responding to this. They have an intake person who will distribute this job to the proper route. I have personally done it directly to Mayo Clinic. Mayo, I messaged them. I am reaching out because we have received this information about hiring from your hospital, and it's coming from one of your physician, right? So I reached out to Mayo Clinic, and it was very nice for Mayo Clinic to respond to me. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. This, you know, that it will be forwarded to our to the right person for those scams. And eventually, I recommended Mayo Clinic to put in the banner in their website to put their beware of job scams. Okay, so if you guys can put that in your website, employers, hospitals, if you're watching and listening, put that in the banner of your website, prevent job scams. If there's a place that these nurses can verify this job offer, that will be very helpful. Or my recommendation is employers who are hiring H-1B or any visa, if you have like a list of vendors somewhere that you can give to these nurses that they can use, that would be great. And nurses, there's no such thing as you have to pay $1,000 just to apply, okay? If somebody's asking you, again, apply. And one more thing, if you're under H-1B, please be aware that it's a guaranteed job that you should be starting within 30 days. If you are not starting within 30 days, you should be paid right away. If you're coming from the United States and H-1B, you should be paid, because H-1B is guaranteed. If you're not starting, if you started in 45th day, then that 15 days should be paid whether you're working or not. That's a fine print written in H-1B. But if you're here and then you're converted to H-1B, I think you're given 90 days to start. If you're not guaranteed that and they made you wait for 2 months without pay, please consult a lawyer. Okay.
A lawyer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, we don't want violence. Talk properly first. Negotiate and talk, and always communicate, because most of the time it's miscommunication, right?
Right.
Are you not getting the proper wordings of this legality? Please reach out. Paul and I and the rest of the Lefora team are here to address your concerns. We might not be able to address in lifetime, but we will address as soon as we can, and we're very happy to help you in any way we can to promote ethical recruitment and employment practice in the United States. Thank you, everyone.
All right. I guess that's a good episode today, Kay. Thank you for everyone who joined us, and to our listeners who may not be able to join the live stream. Yeah. If you have questions, you can send me an email, info@drnursepaul.com, Or you can also send me and Kay a message via social media. Anna, we miss you. We hope to have you back next week. And we're going to announce our show for September next, within the coming week, Kay, because we haven't finalized the outline yet. And it's also going to be first year anniversary of the NP Unlock. So we have special prizes that we're going to be announcing soon, right? So please follow us in social media, Dr. Nurse Paul, Traveling Nurse Hacker. And if you want to share your stories, your American dream, your successes, your journeys, we would love to have you in the show. Please communicate with us. And we're going to talk about how we can bring you into the show. Thank you, everyone. Yes. Thank you, Kay.
Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. The last shout out. And Maria Salcedo.
Nurse One is also here.
Nurse One. Yes. Thank you, Jordy. And those people, RK, who have engaged Chatty. Thank you for joining us. It's a long thing. And Maggie, appreciate all your comments. And see you next week.
See you guys next week.